Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
And Renee.
And we're at Agile 2015 in Washington, D.C. Wrapped up for another year.
Sad face.
Sad face. Yeah, lots of new friends.
Yeah, met lots of new people and plenty of people that I've never actually...
Twitter buddies.
Yeah, Twitter buddies.
Twitter buddies. So we came to you in day one, and then with all good intentions, we come back to you in day five.
Bam.
So let's just do a quick recap of some of the sessions we saw, and then we might just have a bit of a chat about the atmosphere and stuff after that. So Tuesday, did you day two, did you see anything that stood out to you, Renee?
I was going to say there was nothing really special on Tuesday, but then I presented the first thing on Tuesday.
You did. Your talk was on Agile Passion Fruits.
Yes.
Of which I saw a majority of it. I knew what the talk was about, obviously. I had to go and interview, so I didn't walk out because I didn't like it. Sorry.
Thank you.
After some initial technical failures, mind you, at the start there, but you know,
no one needs to know about that.
Damn it! All good. And it seemed to be a really good vibe from the people at the end too. Renee, people were knee deep coming up to you.
Definitely, I think there's always a risk when you do a talk. You're not quite sure how much it will resonate. You're not quite sure if you're pitching it at the right audience and what their level of expertise is. I was nervous because to me, a lot of the exercises that were in it are very simple exercises that I've known for quite a while. So that said, I mean, it's a talk that's predominantly around growing capability, not just within our Agile, but just general capability that helps lift someone up more from being someone who does Agile on a day-to-day basis than maybe doing it to someone who's closer towards being it. And can sort of stretch themselves a little bit closer towards the Agile coach role.
I think a lot of people go, I mean, I think that's a trend actually I've been seeing here, and we were talking about this earlier, is I think there's a lot of people don't understand what an Agile coach is.
I got the feeling that the definition's different from Australia to America. So a lot of people have been referring to Scrum Master / Agile coach, and to me, they're very different roles.
Yeah, I mean, a Scrum Master Iteration Manager certainly has a coaching aspect to it.
Yeah.
And I certainly know that's what, for example, people like Lisa Adkins train on. But as you move through your coaching journey, it's kind of like we used to teach Iteration Manager at high level or Scrum Master at high level. And to me, the coach is when you're moving from high to re. And there should be far fewer of those people in organisations around there. I mean, and there's a lot of people here who are, even though they don't call themselves Agile coaches, some of the real stalwarts and well-known identities in the sphere, have that re-level of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is kind of what it is. But the other part to it is not just knowledge, it's actually coaching skill, knowing how to coach people, which is different. And that was the nice thing about your talk, is you gave people some real...
Tangible
takeaways, mm-hmm. which... That to me is the key thing of any conference talk,
yeah.
and we've spoken about this before on the podcast if you're going to give a presentation. But the talks I went to this year, and ones including yours, where there was something I go, you know what, I can use that, I can take that away, or that's a great idea, that's the stuff I was looking for. Not someone just giving me a, this is what we did, or right, here's me lecturing to you on something.
Yeah.
As long as there's a takeaway in there, that to me is the big thing.
Yeah, so it's always my intent to have very practical based talks, and I think, by the number of people that came up to me afterwards and said, I've taken a lot out of this that I can directly apply, or look, this has really resonated heavily with the problems that I'm dealing with, it's great to be able to meet people's needs.
And you were not only a virgin attendee, which we talked about in the last podcast, but a virgin speaker here as well.
Yes.
So well done. You've got that out of the way now.
Yes.
And now you're a seasoned professional and you can move on.
Yes.
Anything else on Tuesday that took your fancy? I went to a couple of duds, so I'm not the person to ask.
I went to a Stalwarts just to see what that format was like, being in a fishbowl.
So just for which one you saw. So Stalwarts was a concept they came up with. It was quite nice. It was a fishbowl.
I like the idea.
And a small intimate, because there was only, 30, 40 seats in there, right? It wasn't a huge room.
Sort of like a boxing ring, to be clear. It's up on a stage that feels like a boxing ring.
And we were talking about Stalwarts. These are people that, people are being mobbed in the corridors quite a bit. So, people like Jeff Patton, Dean Leffingwell, Jim Benson, Elizabeth Hendrickson, people in different fields who, were sort of invited to stand on the stage. So, I saw some interesting tweets, particularly from both Jim Benson's and Elizabeth Hendrickson's sessions that I was sort of come across the Twittersphere. Which one did you go and see?
I went to see Ahmed Sidki's talk. Mm-hmm. Well, not really a talk. I guess it was Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really recall anything amazing, but I did enjoy just sitting in and the actual format and seeing thought leaders having that opportunity to be able to discuss. And it wasn't just, you know, them answering the questions. What I also loved was that opportunity for people in the audience to get up there and also give answers and give their experiences at the same time. So it wasn't just an expert alone.
Well, it was experts talking to experts, because it was in the advancing
right.
type thing. So you didn't go there to learn story mapping or, you know, what IC Agile is or give me an introduction on SAFe. It really was a discussion. And I was speaking to Jim Benson in the corridor, and he goes, you know, that stalwart session was awesome. I didn't talk about Kanban once. And and he said, we just had some really good discussions. I remember the tweet coming out, someone saying, someone just asked Jim about estimation. Stand back. So, I think a really good idea. And I think kudos. One of the things I do like about this conference, there's always positives and negatives about any conference, but they're not afraid to try something new. And this was a new thing for them this year. And I think
I liked it. I just didn't know why it was called stalwarts and not thought leaders or something like that.
Didn't fit on the thing. I mean, mind you, there's a glaring typo right on the program on every page with their audience levels. Did you see that?
So this is the first time I actually looked at the audience levels.
But have you seen the massive typo down the bottom, which audience levels there are? There's learning, advancing, practicing, and...
Oh, practicing. Practicing.
Practicing. And what's the other one?
Leering. You didn't even notice the... No.
Leering.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, on to Wednesday. Keynote on Wednesday. Jesse
Sternschuss.
Yeah, the improv girl.
Yeah.
Let's call her that. That was a really uplifting session. I think I would love to see more keynotes like hers. I was a little bit... apprehensive is not the word. I was interested to see how she was going to pull off improv in a room of... You know,
thousands
of people.
Yeah.
You know, it was 2,300 people at the conference. So there would have been 1,800 people, I reckon, in that room. And she did it, and actually had a really engaged audience at the end of it, and you could just see the whole vibe of the conference picked up from that point on. It's actually a theme. I mean, you went to a couple of sessions, because you also went to Paul Goddard's session too, did you not?
Yep.
Improv seems to be a thing. There's always like this one trend that takes off. A couple of years ago, it was, you know, visual recording. Everybody was talking about visual recording and drawing and stuff. I didn't see a session on that at all this conference.
No, I didn't see anyone other than me doing it.
And then everyone was coming up to you going, wow, like it was something brand new they had seen before. But this conference, everybody was on improv. You know, there was, I reckon, four or five talks on it this year alone. But anyway, what do you think of the keynote?
So it was very similar to Paul's session. I think, interestingly, she took the approach of agile improv, and he took the approach of improv agile. And I think his message of improv agile resonated a little bit more with me. And by that, I mean, I felt like I could take those exercises out and apply them with a little bit more meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That said, very similar exercises. It was a lot of fun. I particularly liked the exercise around the anti-hero, which I think may have been deliberately done because there was a party on Thursday night around superheroes.
Yeah, I think you could do it with anything.
Like,
but yeah, to give people the premise, what it was you take a sheet of paper, you write on it a superhero name, like, and you just come up with something, anything you can think of. What was your superhero name?
Oh, you really want me to say it on the podcast?
Yeah, you're up there now. People want to hear it.
I had Skank Girl.
Yeah, and I had Captain Obvious. But yeah, you just think of something. I mean, as she was saying, you know, it could be, you know, a super toothbrush or, Captain Receptacle or something along those lines. And then you pass it on to someone randomly, and then it got the things got passed all over the place. And then you flipped it over, and then you had to name their sidekick. So you got someone else's, and you had to name a sidekick on the back. And then you had to draw something, and it was just a fun exercise. It's a nice little icebreaker. It doesn't take a lot of materials and those type of things. So she did a whole bunch of those. We won't go through them all, but I think the main thing is that she was sort of saying it. People hear the word improv, and it's kind of this, you know, I don't put on the spot type, you know, type of a thing. But you know, you can take what we already do in agile and games and icebreakers, But you can learn from what people in the improv space are doing, and we can actually apply the same things that they're doing in improv to agile, which is, as you said, this was really the agile improv versus the improv agile type thing.
So what are other things caught your eye on Wednesday? Anything interesting?
Yeah, probably the best one I went to was Esther Derby and Mike Lowry. So we know Mike, who used to frequent down in the area of New Zealand for a number of years. Esther Derby's obviously a stalwart of the agile community. And they're talking about coaching flow. I can't remember the exact name of the talk now. Coaching flow, moving past resistance. This one kind of caught my eye. They were using maps, influence maps in this one, to when you're a coach, to try and help figure out how you might move the team along. And if you haven't seen an influence map before, and something that you and I have used in the past for different things, but I've never really thought about using it actually as part of my personal reflection on the team. And so the idea is that you have your team kind of in the center, and you're looking, I guess, for all the things that are going to help influence that team or all the people who are on the team. So you may actually even draw team members out, like the developers, testers. You may even put them in individually. It's something you do just on your own. And then you draw lines between them with arrows about who influences who. So, for example, if Bob is a friend of Sally, then you put a line there. But maybe, Bob doesn't like Betty. So there's no line there. And you start to...
Well, maybe there's like a red line.
Yeah, you can use colours. You can use all different types of things. Because if you can influence, for example, Bob, Bob can help you influence Sally, for example.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And so you map these things off. And then they went through this whole idea of different types of power. So there's power like coercive power, reward power, legitimate power, expert power. There's a whole bunch of them. And they go in a, a grid from, all the way from referent, which is like that person's sort of an expert, but it's all referred to, all the way back to coercive, and it's sort of like a positive to negative type flow. And so you try and pick the type of power that those people have, because if, for example, they're seen as an expert, if you can get them to start doing this thing, then people go, hey, if he's doing it, I'll do it, and those type of things.
Was there any commentary on the role of an agile coach and powers associated with them?
Yeah, so one of the things that you do look at for yourself is what power do you have?
Right.
Because if you're seen, for example, as being coercive or something like that, then you may not be as effective in getting your message over as being the expert. When you're the expert, you have different issues that you have to deal with.
Well, I was just wondering if they were proposing not using any power at all. I don't know what that would look like. But
I think this is more, everybody does have a certain power, sometimes even multiple, and you want to use those powers to your advantage. And also to understand perhaps why people might be resistant, because that's really what's the point of this, was to figure out where the resistance was. So one of the things that you'd ended on the map was you actually said, okay, now take an objective about the relationship or the way this person is viewing the transformation, and think of something that against that resistance, so it's a negative objective. So, this person is perhaps, trying to think of some words, some objectives off the top of my head, but you write that against there, and so what you're trying to do is then turn those negative objectives into positive ones. So it's just really a map that, and it's something, I think how Mike explained this was probably the best, and he did it far better than I'm doing right now, but this is something we always do in our head. We go and look at a team
and we go... But it's quite unconscious, isn't it?
Yeah, John's a pain in the butt. I'm not sure I'm going to get to him. I don't know what that DBA over there is doing, but I think I could probably get Sally on board if I teach her this and this and this. And and by putting it down there, it helps you make sure you're focused, because one of the things as a coach is you have to be present, and you don't want to ignore certain members of the team either. And so it allows you to give you a bit of a plan and move forward. And it was a really awesome session. And we're going to put some notes up about it a little later on. But it's always nice to see how people are thinking about different things. It's good to have something in a coaching toolkit. I think the thing about it is, and where people were misconstruing this was people were trying to draw it as a mind map and actually put issues, particular issues on the map. That really wasn't what it's supposed to be about. It's about as a coach when you come into a team, where you're trying to figure out how you're going to bring people along for the ride. The actual issues that you're experiencing are secondary to the map.
To the value that you could get out from being able to determine that right path.
yeah, you might draw a different map for a different issue.
Mm.
So, for example, if I'm trying to introduce TDD into the team, right, the sources of power may be different to if I'm trying to, say, introduce a new tool or perhaps convince management that they should abolish status reports. So because there's different power.
So it's, yeah, so it's quite contextual to the change.
That's right. So you may draw multiple of these things along your journey, but you know, quite often I've got little scribbles on notes, or even when I just meet a team for the first time, one of the things you can start to do is start to draw those maps as you start to learn more about people. The other thing it does actually point out is, are there people that you actually don't know? As you start to...
undoubtedly, yeah.
So you start to hang on, who is a friend of this person, and you can move through. Yeah, but other than that, I mean, I did go along to the Less talk, which was I have this thing.
Craig Larman, Best Friend.
Yeah, Craig Larman, Best Friend. So I interviewed them a little earlier in the week, but I got this thing, and I do like to go and hear things from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So
yep.
Whilst I've read a reasonable amount about Less, I thought, you know, it'd be good to go and see them. Now, the talk was called Introduction to Less. It was an hour or 75 minutes of basically stories, and kind of got to what Less was in the last 4 minutes of the talk, very interestingly.
Oh, really? What was the rest of the talk on?
They're leading up to the problems and things. It was a dialogue, and if you think back on it, you go, I can see why they did it that way. I think a lot of people walked out of it going...
When are they going to get to it? I don't understand it.
Now, they did frame it at the start. They said, I gave a tour, introduction to Less talk at a conference in Singapore, and everybody said, you know, we didn't want a lecture, we wanted the stories.
Ah.
This way, but I think people here wanted the other way around. So
okay.
It was entertaining, and there were some interesting things in there, but if you actually really wanted to get into the crux of what Less is, it probably didn't deliver that. But Thursday...
Yeah, so Thursday I started off in a UX discussion for the enterprise and... quickly found out there wasn't a lot of talk of the enterprise, so swiftly moved about 10 minutes later into Dan Greening's and Jeff Sutherland's Agile Leadership Patterns, the Agile Way of Doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I'll cover this because it's probably going to be on the other joint podcast that we did.
Oh yeah, so we should probably say that. One of the things we did at the end of Thursday was we did a joint podcast with This Agile Life. You'll hear that probably before this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a bit of a lot of open space stuff happening here, and what This Agile Life was doing was basically just sitting in the open space session and saying, hey, anyone wants to talk about anything, come and have a chat. Which was,
yeah, groups of about swarms of 10 joining in.
Lots of interesting people, and so if you were at that one and you're listening to the Agile Revolution, thanks for listening. but yeah, that'll be coming out soon. So yeah, that is on that podcast, but I guess maybe just as a teaser for that, some interesting and maybe disturbing things in that talk.
Slightly controversial, so things such as retrospectives shouldn't be at the end of a sprint, they should be at the start of the sprint, which you know, makes sense when they talk about it being an experiment for the sprint, and I don't have an issue with that. There was a lot of talk in that actual session around things such as limiting work in progress, understanding value and sort of focusing on value. So a lot of Don Reinerston's work, even Dan Pink's work, and Kanban related stuff, which somewhat surprised me. I was happy about and sad about, but yeah.
Anything else on?
So I went to Skip Angels and Richard Watt's Outcome-Driven Organizations, a new operating system for organizational change.
I looked at that one and then I went, mind you, the one I went to wasn't very good, so maybe I should have gone to that.
So the premise behind most of it was, I guess, start with why first. What's the objective that you're trying to get? What's the outcome that you're trying to drive? Defining that purpose up front. Then there's a little bit of a transformational model inside of it, and then getting the outcome that you seek. So it was a bit, there were a number of quick slides around how they've approached that. So talking about behavioural and capability models, almost like a matrix, which I've done in the past. And then looking at how we assess teams from that organisational perspective. So probably not a lot of necessarily learnings for me, but a lot of affirmation around, well, it's interesting to see that, you know, people who have been doing Agile for a while are sort of moving in the same direction and thinking the same sort of things and solving the same problems and coming up with extremely similar solutions towards doing that.
And keynote today, Friday, as we're recording this, which was James Tam. Now, interestingly, I don't know about you, I walked into the room and there was a handout sitting on the on the table, which had essentially, I forget what the name of the handout was, but essentially it's about collaborate. You've got it in front of you here, right? The signs of defensiveness, right? And it's got 50 things on there. And I was sitting with a few folks, and we looked at them and went, oh geez, what's this? This doesn't feel too good, right? What's this going to be? Great, we're ending the conference. What were your reactions?
He went into a story about a hen farm.
Yeah.
And he used it to be able to symbolise red versus green, red being quite a defensive-based organisation, green being quite a collaborative-based organisation. It was a really great story about pecking order and fear and distrust and aggression. And then he went into the shop slide, which was talking about the metrics associated with green organisations and their effectiveness over red organisations. And
we should say green organisations are ones that collaborate,
yep.
And red organisations are ones that...
aggressive or defensive.
Yeah, and we've had often where you've got a lot of people who are really stars in their own right, but don't talk to each other.
Yeah, and so red's like risk and innovation and avoidance sort of
stuff. Now, he did tell us that when they did the thing with chickens, what they found is when they separated the reds and the greens were laying eggs was 256% more effective.
Yep.
More output and also were happier along the way. So then he threw up where you're going to some stats that some researchers did a few years ago about the same type of thing.
Yep. So Cotter and Heskett investigated the net income, the stock price, the revenue, and the workforce churn of an organisation. And he found that, comparing green versus red organisations, for net income, green organisations were 755% more effective.
Now, just in case, right, you're driving your car and you didn't hear that, I'm going to repeat that number again, Renee.
755% more effective.
I can't even fathom that number. That's,
I know.
When he saw 256%, and when...
But wait, there's more.
No.
Yes. Stock price, 826% more effective.
There you go.
Revenue, 516% effective. And workforce churn, I'm assuming less churn here, being 246%.
Yeah, like massive. Just through collaboration, better collaboration.
Yeah, or through not being as defensive as well and through handling it.
That was really the point of his talk, was then it sort of moved on to how to build a more collaborative environment, which, using things like, making sure you've got a collaborative intention, make sure that you're truthful, make sure that you've got self-accountability, self-awareness, and really look at the negotiation and problem-solving skills, throughout there. And I think the thing I liked about James that we learnt through the talk was that, firstly, he comes from a legal background. He was a lawyer for a number of years. So one of the things that he's often seeing is people being defensive, right? It's like, that was his role. And obviously sometimes people are defensive because they have to be. Sometimes they're playing it. But nonetheless, he was saying things like, often in an organisation, we feel like we don't have the ability to make change. That was a self-accountability one. That people would stand in front of him as a judge and they'd say, I didn't have a choice. And then if they did get a choice, then they didn't want to be accountable for the choices that they make. And what he's saying is, in order to get through this, we have to be accountable for that. We have to make choices, but then have to be accountable both for the things that the outcomes we know that are going to happen, as well as the ones that perhaps may not be there. And he does a lot of work with NASA, and obviously brought up the well-publicized NASA shuttle disaster type thing. Where, and I think the interesting thing, I've never heard this part of the story, is when they went and did the interviews and said about the O-rings and interviewed everybody at the company who made that, not one person said that they would have launched that shuttle.
Yeah.
And nobody said anything
because everyone was too scared to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really awesome.
So some of the great quotes that I loved in the session, one was around self-awareness, and he said, defensiveness defends us from fears we don't want to feel. But it's like putting whipped cream onto dog poo.
Yeah, and I'm looking. So you've done a visualization, this which I hadn't looked at very closely, and that's a very nice drawing of dog poo.
Thank you. With cream on top.
Yeah. Do you study dog poo and cream a lot?
No, that was really difficult to do. I spent a bit of time on that one.
There you go.
The other quote that I like is, "We can move a team from green to red in an instant, or you can move from green to red in an instant, but when we do, defensiveness owns us."
Yeah, and he had a, we won't go into it, but he had this great sort of visualization on stage, which was to actually lull people into a green before snapping them back to red.
It was awesome. It was funny.
Yeah. I think the thing that was a real eye-opener was...
I was that piece of paper. I need to clarify it. I felt really, really disheartened by it.
Yeah. Talk to us offline. We won't ruin it in case anyone sees the talk for live. But on the piece, I guess part of it all the way through, he did a few exercises, which again was good to see in a keynote, that he was getting the crowd to think. And one of the things was that where the talk was really going was how you can tell when you're defensive, looking for those signs that you're falling into a defensive type mode. And so the piece of paper we were talking about before was sitting on the table, and what that really was to say, told us to go and take an inner look and find our signs of defensiveness. And I know someone else at my table, I think, encircled almost every 50 on the list, sitting there going, yep, no, yeah. But the idea was to get your top three after you kind of narrowed it down.
What were your top three?
My top three were let's talk about it. We're looking at yours right now. So there's 50 on here, right? Let's be open on the podcast. What are your signs of defensiveness?
I can withdraw into deadly silence when I don't agree with something. I think holding a grudge and obsessive thinking were pretty close together for me, as far as I do them pretty much both at the same time. Mm. And then I tend to personalise everything. Mm.
And interestingly, mine weren't that far away from yours. I don't know whether we talked about it. Was that mine was a sudden drop in IQ. Withdrawal into deadly silence and personalising everything. So we were very close on that. But I was sitting next to somebody and theirs was all about high charge or energy in the body. It was about getting goosebumps and all those types of things. Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting, different view that people actually see when they... Linda Cook's walked by. Hey, Linda, how you doing? We're recording a podcast.
Sorry.
We'll see you. So he got goosebumps, and that was how he knew that he was...
And I spoke to someone, and they said that their stomach tightens up.
Yeah, yeah. And that was what he was saying. Like, and he says he really feels it.
Yeah.
He was talking to somebody once about this, and apparently when your skin goes clammy, that's actually a sign of your body moving the blood to somewhere else because you're ready to go into
fight
mode.
Wow.
And he went, oh geez, and at that point I kind of moved all the glasses and pens away from him because he said, yeah, it's something that he learned about himself. So that was really the point of this, was to do this and actually realise what your early signs are, your early signs of defensiveness. And that was really good. So good talk overall. He's flogging a book, as everybody is at the conference, called Radical Collaboration. Not sure what the book's like, but it was a pleasant surprise for me. It was good to see someone that you haven't heard of before. It inspires you to think. And I think actually all the keynotes did that for me this year. Keynotes were all good in their own way.
Yep.
So before we wrap up and leave this massive hotel, we're sitting in the atrium right now as sort of people
the
walking
biodome.
Through. Yeah, and this is, you may have heard my podcasts from previous Agile conferences over the years. This is the last time they're in a Gaylord property.
Is it?
Which is, and they're these massive things. If you ever come to the States and get to come one of these, they're massive. This is a small one, you've not even seen the extent of it. This is kind of a miniature thing, but they're massive cities inside a building, all enclosed. And I think the nice thing about this one is actually there is a little township or a little... village, I guess, outside where you can at least go and take a bit of a walk in the sunshine out there. Nicely nestled on the Potomac River here in Washington. But what sort of trends, I guess, were you seeing overall?
I'm seeing a lot of people take on board safe. I was really surprised about the statistics of 40% here brand new. because I thought that the chasm was further along inside of America. But, you know, I'm heartened by that many people who are new coming here anyway. Trends.
So, I mean,
leadership, yes. Obviously, improv.
Improv was certainly, yeah, any of those type of things. I think games were big as always, but
scaling,
but I think it was nice. Most of the things I saw were quite new in that space. The coaching stuff, like the advanced, maybe not advanced, but things that aren't just team-based. So a lot of the conferences that we often go to locally, meetups, they're very much tailored at practices and and process. And here there was a lot of things that actually targeted the coach, the you know, the lead, you know, management. There was a lot of things that actually targeted those levels, which you know, by people for that level, which I thought was.
It's quite a number of technical debt based talks as well.
Yeah, now technically that's a big thing. I was speaking to Declan Whelan, who's on the Agile Alliance board, and they've actually kicked off a whole program around dealing with technical debt because it is such a passion for a lot of people there. So definitely. Yeah, the open jam, which we were talking about earlier, it's good to see people sitting in the open jam and all day, every day.
Yeah, and I went to almost every Lean Coffee as well, and that was just great to see the problems and the things that people want to have some answers to.
And we're seeing trends in those. Like, I mean, well, firstly, were they newbies turning up to those, or were they?
It was more people. It was a bit of mix, but I think it was probably more experts than newbies.
Okay. So, any interesting challenges come out from Lean Coffees? I'm not staying at the hotel, so I was using that half an hour to commute in Washington traffic, backwards and forwards.
Yeah, actually, there was a couple of really interesting ones. One was this morning in particular, was around how... Oh, now I've lost it. Wait, we need to edit this bit.
I mean, it's the Agile Revolution. We do no editing.
I can't remember anymore. I had it for a second.
It's been a long week. It's been a long, long week. But I guess they were more advanced topics, I guess, is what you're really getting to.
Yeah.
You know, people really dealing with the challenges that they have.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah, so you got the open space, you know, there was dev jams, there was people coding and all those kind of things. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing that's happening, you know, around the corridors. Agile Alliance had a lounge there, there's always people hanging out in there, which is also good to see. Yeah, there's lots of things happening. Of course, every night there was, you know, something going on. You know, the superhero party last night where it's kind of
noisy.
Noisy and also rather disturbing to see you know, 1,000-odd agilists dressed up in superhero costume.
In tights, yes.
Yeah, a few in tights, yes.
Yes.
Some images just can't be burned away. So
no.
So imagine your favourite agile book author. Right?
In tights.
And then put a Superman costume or something on them, or worse. Then you might have a bit of a sense about what was going on. We went the lame route because we couldn't pack it into our suitcase coming from Australia, excuse, but they still gave us a cape.
Yes.
So, anyway. And lots of mingling parties and things like that. Did you get much of a look through the exhibitor booths at all?
Mostly avoided them.
Yeah. I think just the trend that I was seeing...
There's a lot of tools.
Yeah. And also a lot of vendors selling tools. Bazinga.
Sorry, just to be clear, I've had like 4 hours sleep.
Yeah, anyway, lots of tools. Everyone's selling the board. Everyone's selling the testing solution. You know, I went and looked at one of the testing solutions, and you know, they're basically telling me it's going to change my world and all those type of things. And you know, I said, oh, so does that do with behavior driven development? And they said, what's that?
Oh my god.
So yeah, vendors are vendors. But yeah, the big ones there, obviously version one rally with title sponsors, they had a lot to say. A few smaller vendors, I mean, you would have been to there, there's a new planningpoker.com got released, which Mike Cohen had a really clunky one out for a number of years, although it was kind of good for its time. They've redesigned that and, you know, pushed through, and it's free, which is kind of good to see. But yeah, a few different tools and things to use, but Lots of swag. I think I got about 15 t-shirts or something out at the end of it as well.
Well, that's right. You came here with an empty suitcase.
That's right. that's what outfits me for the year, and I've got to have something to wear. So, lasting impressions as you leave Washington DC, way, you know, on a jet plane. Lots of new friends.
Yep. I think it's certainly a very expensive venture from someone from Australia, both time and a dollar investment's concerned. It's definitely if you love Agile, it's something that you should do at least once in your life.
Mm. And I'm on number 6, I think it is now. 6 or 7 it is for me. For me, it's as much about connecting with...
Yeah, it's more about connecting and talking and ideas and, you know, you teaching others teaching you in the corridors more than anything else.
Yeah, or at lunch. I mean, I think that's where a lot of the friends I've got, you know, along the way and people that I run into are people that I just randomly started speaking to years ago. Mm. So people like Brian Beecham, who is doing amazing things now with refactoring and TDD, and Declan Whelan, who we've recorded on the podcast before, and my good friend Alan Bustamati, who we've got a podcast with as well. So people that I just met randomly through here that are doing really cool things in their communities, and that to me is what this is all about. It's you feel the collaboration in the community in the room. You know, I really felt like there was a large percentage of people in there were really trying to change. I don't want to say change the world. That's a little bit too
corny.
But felt passionate about making things better. I think that's, if you really go back to what the manifesto is all about, that really kind of wraps it up.
I remember what that thing was now. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, okay. So rewind, edit this back in. Yeah.
So it was about the fact that when you search for the word agile in Google, the top 3 results that come back is something around bad.
Oh, yeah. Agile is S-H-I-T. Agile is bad.
Shit and dead as well. Yeah. It was a question. And in fact, there was one of the speakers had a off-the-cuff comment, which was something around, well, with everyone here, the devs must really be working hard this week. And they actually meant it seriously.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I laughed because I thought, oh my God, it's probably very true. Mm. All these Scrum Masters here, they actually have free time and no one's bugging them for a change.
Absolutely.
I think there is a concern that there's a really strong negative movement at the moment against Agile, and that a lot of people aren't seeing value in it. And I can sympathise and I can understand that, and I think that's a lot due to poor implementations and poor people coaching, but a lot of it's also due to the way in which we're not set up to succeed in almost every single transformation I see. Because people don't get it.
Yeah, so hopefully some people come back inspired, and we always say it's in a conference, but I think a week here, I really do come back reinvigorated. It's given me some things to think about, some things to research, some things to stay away from.
Some jobs to do.
Lots of jobs to do, but that's just Renee nagging me about other things more than wanting anything. It's been a week where she's actually seen me in one place. It's always an invigorating week, and I think that's the nice thing about a conference like this. So on that note, I think it's time to head you to the airport, Renee.
Yep, got a plane to catch.
So we'll catch you back on the other side of the planet. But until then,
Viva la Revolution!